Gone are the days of 6% commissions when selling a home. Is that really true? Find out today as we unpack the recently proposed National Association of Realtors settlement, exploring the potential impact on homebuyers and sellers, and expanding on that conversation to draw on similar changes in the financial planning industry to help you identify if your financial advisor has advanced their services and offerings to keep up and stay ahead of the larger industry. All coming up today on Retire Smarter.
Another episode of Retire Smarter is here. I'm Walter Storholt alongside Tyler Emmerich, certified financial planner and a chartered financial analyst, a wealth advisor at True Wealth Design, serving you throughout Northeast Ohio, Southwest Florida, and the greater Pittsburgh area. Find us online at truewealthdesign.com. Tyler, looking forward to this episode today as we get to dabble a little bit in the world of real estate and kind of some big news that's been there for the last couple of weeks on a lot of changes to that industry and some settlements and the fallout of that and some good lessons and parallels to apply to the financial world today. So that should be fun. But first of all, how's life? What's going on? Are you ready for spring? I think we're turning that corner finally.
Yeah, we're getting there. Ready for spring. But today I'm just kind of recapping and thinking about how yesterday went. I don't know if it came through your area, but we experienced, or at least I experienced, my first total eclipse.
Nice.
Yesterday.
Oh, like you were you in the 100, the path of totality?
We were in the path of totality.
How was it?
So yesterday afternoon around 3 o'clock, it got dark for about 4 minutes. And it was, I guess it was a little more dramatic than that. It was a sight to behold. We had our oldest out in the backyard, and you know, my wife and I were a little paranoid, saying, "Don't look up yet! Don't look up yet! Put on the glasses!" You know, you hear all the safety concerns, but you know, for that 3-4 minutes that we got, it was pretty neat and a sight to behold.
That's
Have you ever caught one? Or
so I was in the annular eclipse last year, where the sun doesn't completely get blocked out, but the moon covers it up so that it's a perfect circle for a few moments. So you just have this ring of the sun. So it doesn't get completely dark in that way, but it casts some really interesting light and shapes when the sun gets covered up and it's just that circle. Basically, all the shadows are circles. So it kind of creates this really interesting, it's very interesting to look all around you and all the shadows look very bizarre in an annular eclipse. But I haven't been in a total eclipse where it gets dark. And did the bugs start making noise and the birds all get real quiet for those couple of minutes?
I didn't notice that, but okay. I did realize how many people were off in the afternoon, because our neighborhood, you could hear people yelling and clapping and screaming. We actually had some fireworks go off. It was pretty
wild. Don't you people work?
I was like, wow, this was a bigger event than what I thought. There wasn't too many people working in my neighborhood.
Oh, that is too funny.
Hear them.
I was eating lunch, and I was not in the path of totality, so it wasn't all that exciting, I don't think. I just was looking outside, and it looked like the sun must have gone behind the cloud for a few moments, and then it got lighter again. So it was, I don't think it's as exciting unless you're in that path of totality.
No, probably not. The 3 minutes of totality was definitely the star of the show.
Yeah, pretty cool to experience that. It's just not something that comes along very often. And then even when they do, you're not necessarily going to be under that path. So I think that's what gets people so excited about it, I would think.
So pretty cool. Just recovering from that and really excited to talk about the topic today. And I think it's been on the news quite a bit. I know when we were talking a little bit before the show, you had done some podcasts and ran across the topic before. And it's been, we're just really closely followed. And for those listeners that maybe aren't as familiar, what we're talking about is, you know, last year there was a class of home sellers who sued the powerful real estate industry trade group, the National Association of Realtors, arguing that the way buyers' agents were paid were keeping commissions artificially high. And here in mid-March, I think the actual date was on March 14th, the NAR, National Association of Realtors, kind of came back and proposed an agreement or settlement, which was pretty astonishing. I mean, the dollar value that has been thrown around is $418 million and a few other proposals that were in that settlement. Now, of course, I think it's very important to realize that this is just a proposed agreement. It still needs further approval So we'll see how it kind of shakes out. But there is a lot of question marks, especially in the real estate industry and for upcoming, you know, home buyers and sellers on how is this going to impact, or how could this potentially impact the way that we sell our home. And as I was kind of thinking about that, I figured it would be, you know, helpful for us to maybe outline a little bit about what's in the proposal, but also draw some similarities between what could be happening in the real estate world to something a little closer to home that we talk about on the podcast every day, which is the financial planning industry. There's no doubt, Walt, that our industry has had a litany of litigations and reforms. And, you know, I think back to what, 2008 was Dodd-Frank. We got Secure Act, Secure Act 2.0. I mean, it seems like, you know, every year or two, there's something that comes out with our industry on regulations and, you know, trying to make sure that, you know, families and consumers are protected when working in the financial industry. And that is really,
I'm remembering like the fiduciary, all the talk about fiduciaries and things like that too.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Well, and that shapes the way that we do business, and it shapes the way advisors help their families. And, you know, I figured it was a good time for us to maybe reflect on that a little bit and show how those changes impacted our world and, you know, maybe draw some conclusions about what might happen in the real estate agent industry. Because as of right now, as we mentioned earlier before we jumped on the podcast here, that there's a lot of gray area here, and we don't really know exactly how it's going to all shake out in the end.
That's a great point. Well, you mentioned gray area, and I've always thought it a bit of a gray area or a bit odd in the real estate landscape. Just to kind of start there, maybe Tyler is a good point for you to launch off. There's gray area because technically you hire an agent to work for you, but you're not paying that person. The person who's selling the house typically has covered your agent's pay. And that's always just kind of sat. I mean, I'm happy to not pay that money, but it has always sat a little bit odd for me that the person you're quote unquote sort of competing against to find the best price and negotiate with is the one actually funding and paying your realtor. So right there is always kind of an odd jumping point, I think.
Well, it, in any case, right, it seems logical. And anytime it seems logical, I think you got to kind of think back and be like, well, how did we get to this point?
Right.
And, you know, you look back, you know, over many, many years. I mean, the structure of how these real estate agents and deals have been put in place have been remarkably steady. I mean, home sellers have traditionally paid between 5 and 6% of the sale price in commissions, and that is split in various ways between the seller's agent and the buyer's agent. And just as you had mentioned, that buyer's agent split is determined by the home seller, not necessarily the family actually purchasing the house. And that's, like, I think the crux of where this kind of came up and where we find ourselves today is because do the buyers actually have a say in what that commission looks like and what that fee is to make sure that their value that they're getting from that agent is reflective of the fee that they're paying? And two, with sellers, if you have your seller's agent telling you, hey, let's, you know, we got to pay the buyer's agent here, or the buyer's not going to show your house, or, you know, wouldn't have the buyers as apt to walk through or put in an offer, well, then you're going to try to artificially, you know, keep those buyer's commissions higher, and thus, you know, your price of your home a little bit higher. And that's really where their argument comes into play. When I look back through the data on, you know, kind of history and, you know, kind of how we think, how many individuals and professionals in the real estate industry think this is going to all shake out, you know, there's a pretty common theme that comes up, that this structure of the commissions being, you know, baked into the home price and split between the buyer and seller agent, you know, has really contributed to pretty high commissions and, relatively speaking, you know, some of the highest in the world. You look at commissions in Germany, I think they average in the mid 4% range. UK, they're under 2%. And when you start looking at percentages, that might not seem like much of a difference, but I mean, for perspective, I think the average national average home price now is around $400,000, which is pretty wild in itself say. But you know, you take 6% of that, what are we looking at here? Almost $24,000 in commissions to sell your house, and you know, really brings into question, you know, for some families, they might go, "Hey, that is tremendously worth worth it. I got my home sold. The agents were great. And some individuals, when they sell their home, might look at that price tag and say, boy, that's pretty steep. And, you know, we kind of look at this idea of, well, hey, this is the way we've always done it. This is a structure that's been worked under for a number of years. That's very similar to the financial planning industry. You know, you think back in the 70s, 80s, 90s. I mean, you know, we went from, our industry was full of, you know, stock traders and brokers. You know, I always think of like the movie Trading Places with Dan Aykroyd and
oh yeah.
You seen that in Eddie Murphy? And you know, for those that have not seen that movie, it's, you know, it's quite funny. But at the end, they're on the New York Stock Exchange trading floor, and they're trading pork belly futures. And that's all the guys in there saying buy, 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 sell, 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 in just a pretty wild environment. But you know, that is not what I think of when I think of financial advisors and financial plannings in today's aspect. You know, we've really gone from trying to sell a particular product, whether that product is stock trading or a life insurance product or an annuity or an investment, whatever the case may be, we've really gone from that selling mindset to selling more of advice and taking a more holistic planning approach. You know, so if you're going in and you're meeting with an investment professional to make sure your portfolio is in place, you're meeting with your life insurance agent to, you know, make sure your life insurance is in place, you're talking to an accountant for any tax questions that you have, you're maybe talking to your benefits group at your employer for healthcare. I mean, these are all very siloed and segmented. You know, the industry has gone to much, much more of a holistic approach, and there's quite a bit of value and understanding of how all of these decisions impact one another. So that way you're making sure you're making the best decision for you and your family. But that has been decades long of a transition into getting to where we are today. And frankly, not every financial advisor is taking that holistic approach too. So you're still seeing pockets of this, you know, still today in our industry where, you know, you're just going to your insurance agent or CPA or whatever the case may be.
Definitely see this boiling down to that argument of value. And I see it in the real estate side of, I think your illustration was great. Let's say on the $400,000 house and you're like, all right, well, I'm spending $24,000 in commissions, but what if I try to do it on my own and ended up, you know, with a $20,000 difference in that sales price? And now I did all the work and that actually didn't make any difference in the end of what I actually netted. So did that value actually squeeze more out of what I would have, you know, been able to experience? Obviously, we never really know the answer to that question. It's right. One of those kinds of things that you can't know the answer to how it would have worked out the other way. But I see that parallel to the financial side too, of just, hey, I could do this on my own and save maybe commissions on, you know, X, Y, and Z accounts, but would I be making as wise of financial decisions if I did that? And I'd probably end up with a lower amount anyway. So an Correct. Interesting argument and thought experiment, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. We hit the nail on the head. The question is where's the value at for you and your family? And what are you getting out of this, working with this individual and really making sure it fits in? Because that's going to be different for everybody. And absolutely, you know, I think that the crux of where this stems from, I mean, you look at the agreement that NAR, you know, kind of proposed. It's fascinating, the dollar values. I mentioned $418 million settlement. I mean, if that comes through and gets approved by the federal court, I mean, it's estimated that some 50 million home sellers might get a piece of that settlement. It's going to vary widely across regions and across markets. So I think there's a lot to still be, you know, firmed up here. But you start talking about a dollar value like that, I think it grabs the attention and really says, hey, maybe we should reevaluate and start thinking through, you know, the process and the clarity and how that's kind of conveyed to families when they're buying and selling a home. Now, that settlement, the dollar amount, isn't the only thing that was included in their wallet. There were a couple other things that I think, you know, probably deserve some attention for us to just bring up because they could absolutely impact the way that we do business and when we buy and sell a home. And the first of which is starting as early as mid-July. Again, none of this is set in stone, but possibly by mid-summer, you know, listing of homes for sale in most parts of the country would no longer include upfront buyers agent commissions. So said another way, seller paid buyer's agent commissions would no longer be included in the home listing. So that's that part you had mentioned earlier where, hey, if typical commissions are 6%, well, half of that traditionally would go to the buyer's agent, that 3% would no longer be the case. So you'd be looking at potentially, you know, what, almost a 3% savings on selling your house, depending on how everything kind of shakes out here. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. The other thing would be that they, NAR agreed to create a new rule requiring MLS participants working with buyers to enter into written agreements with their buyers before the buyer tours a home. So this would allow, of course, buyers to negotiate that compensation for their agents up front before they put offers in on homes. Now, I think most people will know what the MLS is, but for those listeners that might not be familiar, we got to stay away from our acronyms, and we would definitely want to stay away from the egghead alert. So MLS.
I can cue it up if you think we're going to need it today.
There, no. It's we're good. But MLS, it's just a private database that is created and maintained and paid for by real estate professionals to help their clients buy and sell property. You know, getting access or getting your home on that MLS, you know, essentially the idea is that's going to get your home promoted and out there so people can, you know, see it. That's where Zillow picks up from, and, you know, realtor.com and all these ways that we find when we start looking for a new home.
And that one's actually kind of interesting, because I think about some of the ways that I've started my home search, and it's often, you know, meeting a realtor at a showing or having a realtor show you the home. And then after you've looked at a home or two, you say, yeah, do you want to work together? Yeah, I guess so. We've already gone on a few dates, right?
Like, let's
go ahead. But this is saying you're kind of
nice.
You're going to have already made that decision before you even really get that in-person interaction, you know, at a home site. You've got to already have that agreement in place. So that, I think, is going to be what maybe changes a lot for realtors, because they're going to have to be much more present and upfront and able to, sure, I don't know, sell themselves before they can get into that more natural environment of being in the home.
Absolutely. So you think about this from a real estate professional standpoint. I mean, you're looking at your world saying, hey, how is this going to impact my day to day? How am I going to work with clients going forward? And, you know, what needs to be in place, and how do we communicate these fees? And a lot of question marks going along in the industry right now. But, you know, as we kind of think about what I'd like to move to next, I guess, would be just, you know, how the industry might look, or how those changes might trickle down to the end consumer, you know, you and I, when we go to buy a home. And you think the first thing that comes to mind, and the first thing that I've seen in our industry when changes started to happen, was fee compression. And in its most simple form, you know, we've talked about it a couple of times already, but, you know, the seller's not having to pay that buyer's agent. I mean, for the average home price, remember, $400,000 a year is pretty close to the average home price. I mean, that means that about $12,000 is cut off of that commission charge right off the get-go. That doesn't mean it's not going to be put back in, or, you know, somewhere else in the agreement, or whatever the case is. But we're looking at a pretty substantial savings in selling a home if this thing kind of shakes out the way that they think it will. Now, you look at our industry and the financial planning industry, boy, we've had so much fee compression over the last 20 to 30 years, and maybe even going back a little bit further. You know, I had mentioned, you know, in the 90s, you called your stock broker, you know, and you made a trade. Hey, I want to buy into Microsoft, or I want to buy Sears, or whatever the case is. You know, there was a commission that was tied to those trades when you wanted to sell investments. You know, we've seen, for the most part, those commissions almost dissipate to nothing. They are still there, but we would be looking at pretty sizable amounts prior. Whereas now, today, there's platforms where you can do no commission trading with ETFs and stocks and so on and so forth. Now, you look at some of the other vehicles that you can invest in, like a mutual fund, for example. You know, mutual funds are, simply put, just a place where you hand a company your money and they go and invest it for you. And there are thousands of these mutual funds out there that you can invest in, all with different objectives and risks and fee structures. The vast majority of them, or all of them, have what's called an expense ratio, which is basically a yearly fee for investing in that particular mutual fund. And these can range wildly. There's mutual funds out there, probably 2-2.5% per year in fees. Now, over time, these expense ratios have gone down substantially. There are mutual funds now and ETFs now that are offered through some of the big discount brokers that have no expense ratio. Now, there's other ways that they get their fees, but, you know, that expense ratio, for example, has, you know, drastically changed over the last 20 to 25 years. you know, another thing, you know, if you look at your account statement and you look at those investments that you have and you happen to hold a few of those mutual funds and you start seeing Class A shares or Class C shares after the name, you know, this is a way that investment professionals would get paid commissions on either the front end, in the case of a Class A share, where you would buy into that mutual fund and there would be a fee off the top that would go to the advisor, or in the case of maybe a C share, where on the back end, when you sold out of that investment, you would have a fee. And those fees can range all the way up to, you know, 5.5% off the top. You know, those were extremely common in the early 2000s. You know, nowadays it's very rare that we run into them. There are still a handful of mutual fund companies that charge those loads. But if you're looking at your statement, that's a tall tell sign if you see, hey, Class A shares or something like that, to where you maybe want to look at and have a conversation with your advisor on, hey, how are you getting paid? How are we utilizing these? Should we be going to a more cost-effective investment strategy going forward? And then, you know, finally, I think about this idea of fee compression. I mean, we've seen it in the industry and the life insurance side of the business as well, and in the annuity side. I mean, you know, some of the highest expense products that we have in our industry are annuity products and whole life insurance policies or universal life insurance policies. And just like with mutual funds, you know, over the years, those commissions and fees have started to decline and go down. I mean, we even have now commission-free annuity products where that commission has gone altogether. So I could see the real estate industry, you know, moving in a similar direction and really trying to evaluate and saying, hey, what are our list of products? What are we doing? What's our services? Where's our value add? And let's make sure we're being thoughtful on, you know, what is the true cost or that is, you know, reflective of the value that we're adding, you know, depending on the service or depending on the relationship that you're entering into with these agents.
That's a great point.
Yeah, oh no, absolutely. And the fee compression is just one side of the coin. I mean, the other thing is just really taking a step back. And what I think is going to probably be more fascinating in the coming years is, you know, how does the structure of services in the real estate industry change, right? So essentially, how are, you know, buyers and sellers and their agents going to work together, you know, going forward? Certainly, it seems like buyers are going to now have more room to negotiate their commissions with their agents up front. But, you know, what I think about a first-time home buyer, you know, I put myself in the shoes when I bought our first home. We didn't have a whole lot to put down on a down payment on the loan. So the question is if we wanted to have an agent help us, you know, would we have to have more money coming out of our pocket up front, you know, to kind of help those services, or is it baked into the mortgage? Like, it's going to be fascinating to kind of how that changes, because hey, a first-time home buyer, that might be a problem, but if you're a retiree and you're purchasing your second home or moving to another, you might have plenty of cash, and paying a buyer's agent up front, you know, might be, you know, really good in your situation.
I just view this as competition is never a bad thing, and I think we've seen that in the financial world where it helps people get more options, and the free market decides where the value is and what's important, and it's kind of a good lesson of that. And I don't know. I think maybe a lot of the concern on the real estate side is just going to get worked out on its own naturally. If we just open it up to more competition and more options for people, we're going to see what that path of least resistance ends up being, and that'll be what kind of shapes the industry going forward. So I don't know. Maybe it's a good little hiccup and change in that industry, just to kind of, you know, shake it up a little bit, see what happens and where the dust settles. Yeah.
Well, I think it's always good. Competition is always good. And you know, in the case of the real estate industry doing things the same way for a number of years, I agree with you. I think the shakeup could certainly be good. You know, I think it's even fascinating to me that over the, you know, last 15 years, how technology has changed. You know, you got Zillow now where you can find, you know, homes and search and set up a showing, you know, right there. You can list your house on the MLS and for a flat fee. I mean, there's all these technological advances that you didn't have previously that makes selling your home, I don't want to say easier, but certainly more efficient. So taking a good hard look at the fee structure, I think can only be a good thing. I mean, I had a family last year before all of this. This was in the springtime, actually sell their home. And, you know, they actually worked with an agent that worked on a flat fee structure. They didn't have the percentage commission, and that individual would basically put the house on the MLS. Again, that's really where you want to get your house if you're selling it, to make sure it gets eyes on it. And then that agent did the paperwork for them. They used an app to set up showings and, you know, put a key on the front door and a lock box, and that's how they ran it. And it really worked for them. But, you know, I look at some families that I've worked with over the years and gone through that process of selling a home, where they look at all that and go, whew, that seems like a lot. I don't want to have to deal with showings. I don't want to have to, you know, kind of work the negotiation piece of it. I want to have that help, and I want to have some of that expertise. And that's where, you know, those types of individuals and families that want that level of depth of knowledge and expertise, they might work under that more traditional structure. So I don't know if we want to call it like that a la carte service, and how that might work out. But certainly I could see the industry going into a direction of, hey, you know, no matter where you're at and what you need, you're going to be able to, there's going to be an agent out there that's going to be able to meet you where you are and do it for a fee that is reasonable and similar to what you would expect the value that you're getting out of it.
Yeah. Rather than just an assumed way of doing things, you'll have a couple of choices that will match up to what your specifications are and your preference. That's sure. Great. It's a good lesson.
If I look at it from our industry too, right? I mean, I think we see quite a bit of similarities here as well. I mean, if you've listened to the podcast before, I mean, you've heard the term holistic financial planning, having a financial plan in place and just how important that is. I might sound like a brokered record when I bring that up. You know, you look at that type of approach and where it fits in and how it's changed over the years, where I'd mentioned, hey, you know, a lot of times you made your decisions in silos, and you talk to your trader, you talk to your investment professional, you talk to your insurance agent, and you made all these decisions, your tax or your CPA individual, you made these decisions in a silo. You know, gone are those days. And I think there's certainly, from True Wealth's perspective, we fit in and done it in a little bit different manner and a different approach. And really, I think that the families that end up working with us see value in that holistic approach and making sure that those decisions are all integrated together. Now, as we look at our industry over the last, say, 5 to 7 years, you know, I think the fee structure has remained relatively constant and pretty stable. But what really has changed in the way that we do business over the years is, over the last, say, 5 to 7 years, has been, hey, when I first got in the industry in, say, 2008, 2009, you could really differentiate yourself as a financial advisor saying, hey, I'm going to take a holistic approach and I'm going to look at your taxes, your investments, and your life insurance needs and make sure those decisions are all working together. Well, over the last, again, say 5 to 7 years, what we've seen is a big shift to say, hey, fees haven't gone up, fees haven't gone down, but that breadth of services provided has expanded tremendously. You know, now I have families and we have conversations around healthcare planning. Hey, what are you choosing at your employer? What are you doing from an estate plan standpoint? You need those estate documents completed? We'll take care of that for you and help you make sure you get those estate documents put in place. Hey, not only will we give you the tax advice, but we'll also file your return. So as an industry, financial planners now more than ever have needed to really open up their advice offering to be able to meet the needs of the families. And as those needs have changed and we've gotten access to more technology and, you know, what families are trying to accomplish have changed, you know, we too have kind of had to change and fit that advice in to harmonize it all and just really make sure that really any decision that you make that has a dollar sign in front of it, you know, your financial advisor should be a resource there to help you navigate that. And if they're not, you know, get you to the right professional that they communicate with and that's on the same page of what you're trying to accomplish to make sure that you put yourself in the best situation going forward for the most positive outcomes that you can get.
Positive outcomes, that's what we want. And if you want to walk through that journey with Tyler Emmerich, Kevin Krosky, and the great team at True Wealth Design, it's very easy to set up your initial conversation to see if you might be a good fit to work with the team. All you have to do is go to truewealthdesign.com and click the Are We Right For You button, and that'll let you schedule a 15-minute call with an experienced advisor on the team. Again, truewealthdesign.com, or you can call 855-TWD-PLAN, 855-893-7526. All that contact info is in the description of today's show, so you can find it easily. And Tyler, really appreciate your perspective on a unique topic today and something that's definitely been in the news. And I know it's going to kind of continue to morph and shape over the coming months and maybe years. You know, these things tend to sometimes develop into a battle that might take a while to really see how the dust settles.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt. I mean, hey, the financial industry, we've been changing over the last 30, 40 years.
That's right.
So they got a long road ahead.
Secure Act and then a Secure Act 2.0 right after that. So
absolutely. We'll see if there's a 3.0. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure at some point, or we'll just call it something different. Good stuff. Well, thanks for your help and get those. It sounds like your eyes are in still good shape despite looking at the sun yesterday. So you must have had the non-knockoff approved glasses to see the sun yesterday. So that's good news.
We did, although I was worried. I asked my wife, hey, where did we get these from? She's like, Amazon. I was like, uh-oh. Okay.
Uh-oh.
She's like, but no, they were good.
No, you're not seeing circles today. So that's good.
No.
Very good news. All right, my friend. Well, I appreciate your advice and guidance on the show today and great perspective. And come back and join us next time, everybody. We'll see you on another edition of Retire Smart.
Information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute investment, tax, or legal advice. Information is obtained from sources that are deemed to be reliable, but their accurateness and completeness cannot be guaranteed. All performance reference is historical and not an indication of future results. Benchmark indices are hypothetical and do not include any investment fees.